Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Capital Market Series with the New Gen Mindset Podcast. I'm Dan Kozel here with Nick Tartaglia. Nick, a lot of movement in the commodity space right now. We keep talking about it. Prices are going up. There's massive shortages. When is that bridge going to merge when technology and blockchain kind of get into the space?
Yeah, it seems it's an outdated space that obviously is necessary. And with kind of the amount of capital flowing towards the industry from just government spending alone, kind of with all these mandates and regulation direction, you know, the industry as a whole kind of needs to be optimized and improved. And it's something necessary for the space to kind of get to the point where we want it to get. You know, us being on New Gen Mindset, we love the commodity space. It's kind of a theme that we touch upon a lot. So it definitely fits really well into kind of the discussion we're going to be having today.
Yeah. And for our listeners, the goal of this show is to present new investable opportunities that you could potentially put some money to work with. So what we wanted to do is there's a very interesting company. They just completed a merger or an acquisition about a couple of years ago with the original co-founder of the previous company, which we're going to talk about. With us here today, she is the president and CEO of a company called MineHub. Welcome to the Capital Market Series, Andrea Aranguren.
Thanks, guys. Thank you for having me.
So, Andrea, the beginning of most of the episodes, what we do is we kind of like to get a sense of who the person is. Do you mind giving us a little backstory about yourself, you know, where you come from, the industry you worked in, and then bridge it back to, you know, how you came to be part of MineHub?
Sure. I have spent most of my career in the physical commodities market, primarily on the operations and logistics side. So I've spent time at big companies like Goldman Sachs, IHS Market. I've worked in a variety of different physical markets, oil and gas, metals, and even environmental commodities. And back in 2019, I co-founded a company called Weybridge with a partner, one of the ex-Goldman traders and two other technologists. And we set out with a mission to digitize the physical commodity supply chain, which we saw as in desperate need of digitization. And having come from the industry and experienced the pain and the massive inefficiency firsthand, we've sort of marveled at how there weren't other digital tools in the market yet. And so we developed a trade management platform, and we found ourselves competing more and more with a company called MineHub. And so in March of last year, we sold Weybridge to MineHub. And since then, I became president and CEO.
So one of the things that I think of the commodity space, and this has been going on for decades, is the lack of sort of, they're always the slow first, they're never the first mover when it comes to technology. Even just going to mining conferences, like we were just at PDAC, there's still that huge gap right now between people that are willing to accept the new technology versus ones that have been doing mining and you know, oil and gas like a certain way. And they're like, well, I've done really well here. Like, well, why would I have to change this? So maybe talk to us just about the dynamics right now, maybe, and the psychology that is really, it's kind of, I don't want to call it a battleground, but it's more like there's a lot of convincing, I think, that needs to happen too, to get people to believe in obviously what you guys are building. But talk to us about the dynamics and what have you learned over your, you know, decades of experience about talking to people in the space?
That is a fascinating question. It is definitely very tough to convince companies that have been doing things for hundreds of years the same way. And it's not perfect or optimal, but it works, right? So change management is a ongoing problem that we continue to kind of work through with our customers. The interesting thing is that I mentioned how when we co-founded Weybridge, we sort of marveled at how there weren't other digital tools. And we actually spent quite some time researching other companies that had come to the market. And we're like, okay, this is actually was an interesting idea. Why did it fail? And ultimately, it failed to drive adoption because of the reasons that you're talking about, because they couldn't actually get companies to actually use the technology. Even if it was a great platform or it was solving the right problems, they just couldn't get wide scale market adoption. So early on, we had this strategy where we fundamentally understood that as a small startup, we weren't going to convince a major market leader or multi-billion dollar commodity company to actually change the way they're doing things. The entity that could actually change their mind is a significant supplier or a significant customer. So we, on purpose, really just laser focused on signing a very large market leader as our customer so that they would drive adoption and they would really drive that change management across their supply base. And we had that thesis early on back in 2019, and it has really proved to work for us. We have been really fortunate to have a company called Southwire, which is a major copper manufacturer based out of the US, as our first customer, and they mandated the use of the platform, which essentially brought on every major mining company onto the platform, created a huge amount of credibility, and that created the momentum and the network effect that has really helped us to grow and gain commercial traction in the market. So I think having key customers and as partners to drive adoption for us has been really key. The other forcing function, and you mentioned it earlier in the conversation, has been regulation. Mm-hmm. So the reality is many companies won't do things unless they have to, unless a major customer or major supplier is telling them they need to do something different, or the government's telling them to do something different. There is a small group of customers that will say, I believe in digitization and I want to invest in the future and I'm going to adopt a new technology unless they have to in this market, just because of so many different dynamics in mining. And so it's something that means that sales cycles are probably longer than technology in other markets, but ultimately we feel really well positioned because we do have really large customers that are helping us to drive momentum and engagement on the platform.
And so when you did have those conversations, I don't know how much depth you can talk about, but what was it? Because it's always that breakout, right? You have that initial conversation. It obviously took the longest because then after you had the momentum, but what was it, I guess, in that client's mind where they just saw the opportunity and where obviously where this industry is going for the next 10, 15, 20 years, essentially?
Yeah, absolutely. It was really around, so that's really, you're asking kind of what was the value proper? What was the reason that that customer was actually willing to, you know, invest in a totally innovative way of doing things in platform? And for that customer, it was really around two main things. One was around efficiency. So it was just becoming unsustainable. They have a very complex and very broad supply base, and it was becoming incredibly difficult to manage so many different kinds of incoming material across different areas of the world to all of their different plants. And so they realized that it was unsustainable and they needed to invest in technology and that their existing ERP or other tools were never going to cut it. The second piece was that they do happen to be very forward-thinking. They're investing in a variety of different technologies, not just across, you know, trade management and operations and logistics, but sustainability. They're often involved in different pilots. They're involved in a variety of different working groups. So honestly, we were just fortunate that this customer, core to their strategy and sort of their culture, is innovation, which is why they were willing to take a major leap of faith. I think we had maybe 10 people at the company when they signed with us. It just raised a $10 million Series A. So we had that going for us. But, you know, the platform was highly undeveloped. It was very, very new. It was totally unproven. And not only did they sign with us, but they mandated the use of the platform. There was one supplier that actually told them, we're not going to use this platform. And they actually stopped doing business with them. That was the level of commitment that we got from them.
That's nice.
That's very, very important. Nick, just one more thing, it's all about spreadsheets at the end of the day. We're trying to eliminate the use of spreadsheets being all over like drives
human
and whatnot.
Error, all the human error.
But Nick, go ahead.
No, but basically what I was going to ask was, is it a fair way to kind of, because obviously now we're going to start touching on the operation of MineHub, just to kind of get a quick understanding of what MineHub is from you. And before that, is it fair to kind of dissect it in a general theme to say supply chain management meets blockchain meets the commodity space? Is that a fair kind of way to kind of characterize what MineHub is?
It's a fair way with one caveat. So we historically, MineHub relied on blockchain more. Through the acquisition of Weybridge, Weybridge did not utilize blockchain in its tech stack or in its architecture. So the blockchain, we still use blockchain for the most commercially sensitive data. And some customers do require us to have some data on the blockchain, but the platform is sort of a hybrid platform where only aspects of the data are written to the blockchain. So it's not truly a blockchain only solution where it's hosted on the AWS cloud. We invest a lot of money and time in ensuring the security of our platform. We go through SOC 2 audit certifications, et cetera, et cetera. But that would be the only caveat.
Okay, perfect. So do you mind kind of give us a basic breakdown of the mission and kind of purpose of MindHub just before we keep going into what MindHub is?
Sure. Well, the mission of MindHub is to make the commodity supply chain more efficient, resilient, and sustainable. So what does that mean in practice? So we say we are a post-trade management platform. So there's a lot of platforms. If you think about Amazon, it's a marketplace where you can go in and buy and sell. Suppliers list, things for sale and buyers come in to buy that. So we are not a marketplace. We don't facilitate digital buying. We found that in this market, buyers and sellers have known each other for a really long time. They've been doing business together for decades in many cases. And most business is done in conferences or on golf courses still, and not really via digital platforms yet. Where the true inefficiency and where the true opportunity comes in mining and metals is actually in everything that happens after the buyer, the sell is agreed. So once an order is confirmed, it gets uploaded to the platform. And then that sets off a series of workflows where via our technology, you can centralize any task that needs to be done to fulfill that actual order and any data associated with that order, which sounds, this is not like buying a pair of shoes on Amazon where it's, one shipment that is a huge amount of transparency coming from one warehouse, right? These are orders that in 1 month, you could have a vessel with 1,000 metric tons coming into a warehouse, and then it moves on to 50 different trucks in order to, go to one location, and then maybe 20 go to one location and the other 30 go to, it's incredibly complex supply chains with a huge volume of data. And we go to the source, we automate all that data, and then we have a variety of different partnerships so that our customers and their suppliers can see at any moment in time in real time where their material is. And so what we found is that once we automate all of the transactional and the order data, that unlocks this incredible opportunity for reporting. So we also have a really robust reporting and analytics capabilities on the platform. So we can help manufacturers forecast inventory levels to see if they're running short on inventory and to do a variety of different, we're doing more and more ESG and sustainability reporting. We do supplier performance reporting. I think we have like 150 different custom reports right now, the last time we counted. So that's just sort of high level about the platform.
So go ahead, Dan.
No, go.
Oh, yeah. So basically, it's really allows the industry in a way to kind of be more optimal in terms of understanding where there's holes and gaps and understanding how to kind of adapt to how the ecosystem is evolving. Because obviously, if you go the old way, it's a little more chaotic. So having kind of this way to be transparent with how resources move and where they're moving from, I guess you can kind of understand your supply chain much more optimally so that when you need to evolve or adapt your supply chain, it's easier to make that decision.
That's right. And that became more and more important post-COVID, honestly. I was in logistics, right? For many years, I would send a delivery schedule to a supplier and 9 out of 10 times, shipments arrived according to the delivery schedule. So there was more predictability around when material was going to arrive. But now there are consistent supply chain disruptions. There's disruptions in the freight market. There are just so many different factors now that probably 4 out of 10 times a shipment arrives when it's supposed to now, if I had to guess.
That makes sense.
So I want to build on that actually, because we saw what happened in Baltimore, right? That the ship crashed. Jeez. That caused like probably trillions of dollars of economic activity to like slow down. And so these are really the risks, I think, that many people don't realize, many businesses don't actually understand until it actually happens. But when it actually happens, it's the most expensive mistake that a business can ultimately hit. It hits their bottom line pretty aggressively, right? So when you see something like that happen, how are you guys positioning yourselves in the market right now to obviously demonstrate that, like, hey, there is a massive opportunity here for you to have a strong mitigation strategy on top of all the other benefits you guys are talking about, the buyers and sellers and the whole networks being interconnected. But maybe just talk about how MineHub is positioning itself in the marketplace to provide businesses with more transparency on stuff like that.
Yes. Seeing those events is obviously unfortunate, but in a lot of ways, it's our best sales tool. I mean, it reminds me also the Arubis fraud last year, a huge company out of Europe. They claimed, I think it was 196 million euros in losses because of a fraud that occurred due to their inventory. And so these are opportunities for us for education, really. And when you sell to a company that is resistant to change and has been doing things for a really long time, and you talk about mitigation of these sort of one-off big events, they kind of, the tendency is it's not really going to happen to me. Happened to them because of XYZ reason. And so these kind of events serve as an important reminder. And so we will actually do broad outreach to our entire pipeline. We did that right after that event, specifically showcasing how we would have been able, you know, to improve their ability to manage this extreme situation via the platform, via the visibility that we provide into the shipments itself, as well as visibility into inventory. So we had customers that had material on that vessel, right? And so they can see, they can better communicate with their customers. They can better plan. They can share information on a more timely basis. But more importantly, they can better see where else they have material that they could deliver to customers and cover and sort of better plan for these kind of situations. And that's a really extreme example, but there's a lot of examples that happen all the time. Yeah. Rail cars break down. There's issues at interchanges. There's swells. There's extreme weather. These are the kinds of things that are happening every single day. But because of our platform and the visibility that we provide and the fact that we're feeding real-time data across their entire supply base, it really empowers customers to make better decisions and have more time and information in order to really optimize their businesses and their operations.
Kind of looking at it from a macro standpoint, the world is kind of shifting in a way that people didn't expect it to, especially, let's say, from a deglobalization standpoint or from a military standpoint. And this kind of produces an environment where the world is kind of entering what some might not necessarily agree with, but it's kind of hard to disagree with, in the sense that, like, the world is becoming a little more chaotic and disruptive, you know, from all these geopolitical forces. And it's obviously rippling into the supply chain, you know, like kind of in the what's happening in the Red Sea, in the Middle East. You know, you've had those problems with the Suez Canal and Panama, and all these ports are very important. But as the world kind of shifts and nations start to incur more of these conflicts, obviously that ripples into the supply chain. And that kind of trickle effect is something that, if the industry as a whole doesn't really necessarily start to get a grasp of and become more proactive with tools like this, I feel like they're going to end up hurting themselves and their stakeholders in this process.
That's true. And ultimately, consumers will be affected, right? Yeah. I mean, if you're a manufacturer, you'll end up having to hold excess inventory that impacts your working capital, which could increase prices, or maybe you just aren't producing enough and there are shortages. It's unavoidable that there will be impacts to improper management.
Yeah. And it seems to be far more important now, in terms of the environment we're in on a global scale, to be proactive with this than before. I guess the world itself ends up becoming more of this pressure point on these companies to evolve. And that kind of becomes your sales pitch. Like, guys, this is why I exist, because I'm here to kind of allow you to be more proactive in this chaotic environment that That's you right. didn't have to experience before.
Exactly. And it's political forces, it's globalization, correct. It's regulatory forces, it's climate change, arguably, it's supply chain disruptions, it's freight disruptions, it's labor shortages. So it's incredibly painful and administrative to manually enter data into a million different spreadsheets and systems. Yeah. People don't want to do that anymore. Yeah. So hiring and retaining people to do that is even becoming more difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't like looking at spreadsheets all the time, especially when everything's kind of scattered around. It's a total nightmare. I noticed last month was a big month for you guys, particularly, Nick and I were microcap investors. We're obviously looking at opportunities. Sumitomo is massive, from my understanding. And that is a very unique partnership. One of the press releases was you guys announced an expansion with them. Like, tell us a little bit more about that.
I still am in awe at the level of partnership and commitment that Sumitomo has. I mean, really, they're a Japanese trading house. Even culturally, you know, you don't see a lot of Japanese trading houses taking a big bet on a Canadian-based startup, tech startup. So it's really remarkable. They truly, truly do believe in the need for digitization, and they are expanding their use of our platform. They've been working with us for a long time to build out the historical mine hub platform in the concentrates or the bulk commodities market. But through the combination with Weybridge, it opened up an opportunity for them to engage more in the refined market. So in refined copper and refined aluminum, which Weybridge was more focused on. And so the expansion of the partnership is really a commitment from Sumitomo, from the most senior levels of the organization, to invest, one, to start to use the platform to actually move their refined copper and aluminum business onto our platform, which obviously will have a huge ecosystem or sort of network effect, because they'll bring on all of their customers and all their suppliers. And that expands, and that basically brings us into the Japanese market, which is a market that we don't have a huge presence in yet. So that is hugely important for them to actually start engaging, bringing their business onto the platform, bringing their network onto the platform. But they also help us from a commercial perspective. So they introduce us, they help us set up sales and commercial meetings. They're sort of a mini outsourced sales arm for us, which is remarkable in a lot of ways. So they've been partners for a long time on the concentrate side, and now they're just unleashing their resources and their network on the refined copper and aluminum side.
Nice.
I guess they kind of understand the value to kind of see the supply chain or their entire operation all the way to these third party affiliates. That, because I mean, obviously we know that nowadays a lot of companies are going to have to start reporting on things like CO2 emissions and a lot of these different metrics, that if you kind of get your entire supply chain or your third party affiliates kind of involved in this process, your data just becomes more relevant and more, I could say, more precise. So when you do these reports, at the end of the day, it's kind of, I'm just trying to give more value to my stakeholders, whether it's the environment, whether it's the citizens of a nation, whether it's investors, you can understand my entire value chain and I can give you more precise data.
And the point is more precise data because it comes from the source. A lot of times it's been automated, but also more proof around that data because there's multi-party validation. So the whether they're a supplier or a customer, and Sumitomo often acts as an intermediary. They'll buy from a mining company and sell to a smelter, or buy from a smelter and sell to a manufacturer. And so they actually play a really important role in the supply chain because they kind of sit in the middle. So for them to bring on buyers and sellers provides that opportunity for traceability and proof of data around what any of those companies is reporting, because there's that multi-party validation around the data.
I know that clearly I just having this conversation and obviously looking at the presentation, I mean, the barriers to entry on this are probably extremely high at this point, and you've found a way to get into the entire ecosystem with partnerships, which is amazing. So maybe just talk about that real quickly. Like, who are you ultimately competing with? Because I can't think of anybody off the top of my mind, unless it's like, maybe it's the Googles because they have spreadsheets, but like, they're not in the 3PL logistics space. So maybe just talk about that and talk to the audience about that landscape just real quickly.
Yeah. I kind of hate that question because the answer is the status quo. And when you talk to investors, they're like, come on, you don't have any competitors. Well, it's not that we don't have competitors. There are actually a lot of digital solutions coming to the space. There's visibility platforms, there's procurement platforms, there's, you know, emissions accounting and reporting platforms, but there really is no platform like ours that provides as comprehensive of a solution that is custom built for the market. And so often we don't lose out in any sort of sales discussions to any, we have not lost out to any other company to date. If a customer or a prospect decided to not move forward, it was often because they felt like they weren't ready to digitize. So really our biggest competitor really is the status quo. It's Excel, it's email, it's just hiring people to do manual work and being okay with the inefficiency and the lack of visibility for now.
Got it.
So it's not a matter of competition. It's more of a matter of getting the old system to evolve. It's more of a mental psychological barrier that we're trying to break through. And it's not really a matter of competition, since it's just more of an old way of doing things. Here's a new solution. But then there's that barrier to kind of, okay, let's take the effort to actually learn this new process and move forward.
Exactly. And that's why I think we have a really effective sort of sales strategy or implementation approach, because when we do sign a customer, we give all of their counterparties a free account. So that becomes a forcing function for them to have to log on and have to engage with the platform. And it's almost like a free pilot for them because they're not being charged, but they get to really see the value of the platform. And that's actually how we've been able to convert. Most of our recent sales have been free users that we converted to become paying customers because they saw the value of the platform, because honestly, they had to, because they had to log on, and that created an opportunity for them to see, oh, well, this actually is worth it.
So I guess that we'll talk more about the number aspect. How do you guys make money?
So we charge SaaS fees. We have a bit of a unique business model. So we charge volumetric SaaS fees. So we iterated on this. I mean, it probably took us like a year and a half to find out like what was exactly the right sort of fee structure that was most well received by the market. And interestingly, this notion of being charged per metric ton managed via the platform has actually been incredibly well received. And so we charge on average about 50 cents per metric ton managed via the platform. But of course, we wanted some certainty around revenue, and we wanted to make sure that customers were committed to actually implementing the platform. So we always charge a minimum fee, which tends to be about like 50% of what we expect the total fee to be.
Got it. So it's a two-pronged approach. You're charging on the volume that the clients or the buyers and sellers are obviously exchanging through the platform. And then there's obviously like, I'm probably a subscription model. It's like a monthly SaaS fee, essentially, right?
Yeah, we bill monthly, monthly sort of minimum SaaS fee. And then we're also opening up additional revenue streams. So you may have seen the press release about the Canadian bank that we signed. That one's
that was my next question.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that was a really interesting one, because the consignment module, which they're going to be utilizing, was actually, we used to give that for free. And then we realized that this was actually incredibly value additive. And so we just said, let's try charging somebody for it and see if they'll actually pay. And we're seeing a huge amount of interest actually now. And so that's actually a new revenue stream that we hadn't originally projected, because it originally had been for free.
Got it. One of the things too with logistics, and the only reason I'm asking this question is because I actually worked for a factoring company when I first started my sales career, just getting out right out of school. But I know that financing of goods becomes a really important key just to get things rolling, right? It's all about speed and efficiency. So is that going to be another potential arm that you're going to be looking at? And is that also why that bank that was press released a couple of weeks ago, is that another growth opportunity for you guys?
Yes, definitely. So leveraging everything you talked about, the visibility into collateral, the multi-party validation, the efficiency the platform provides, and offering it to banks as a way to mitigate risk for their commodity lending activities, but also to improve the efficiency of their own teams by leveraging our data automation, is a huge growth opportunity for us and a big focus of ours. So we are exploring a variety of different partnerships also with different banks and financing institutions to help us build out that extension of the product. That will probably, as you know, though, banks are very slow moving. So that will likely be a 2025 opportunity, but we're laying the groundwork now.
Nice. Is there... Yeah, go.
Go ahead, Nick.
Are there... Okay, so this is more of a kind of like a speculative conversation that me and Dan sometimes like to touch about is there any place in what you guys are doing in terms of tokenization of mining assets? Is there some sort of synergy in that topic?
That is Vince, our chairman. That is his dream. Definitely. I don't think anytime soon. I think given how hard it is to even convince some players in the market to send us an Excel file, mm-hmm. I think they're a long way before getting on board with any sort of tokenization or, blockchain truly from an operational perspective.
Because I feel like that would obviously I feel like it is an add-on to what you guys do, because then it's like the transparency is even clearer, because you Definitely. Kind of really so. But it's an interesting thing, because me and Dan going to PDAC and stuff like that, it's a conversation we see some of the younger people having, but not necessarily something the older guys are having. So it's just something we like to ask people that are in the space, and seeing that you guys are kind of in that middle ground, we thought it would be something interesting to kind of get your feedback on, or what you guys are working on, or if there's anything related to that theme. So
it comes up, and I think it's definitely in the future, but I think it's a ways out.
Okay.
It's timing, Nick. It's always a matter of timing in these industries, right? Mm-hmm. I want to kind of, wrap up here real quickly, just with regards to why should investors put you guys on their watch list? And maybe we'll talk about the capital structure as well, as to why, the venture, why was that like a vehicle for you guys to go out and kind of raise capital to get started as well?
Sure. So why, for your first question, so why should investors be interested in MindHub? We really are at a very exciting inflection point. So between the acquisition, between the two companies, we've invested about $40 million in what has now become a very mature platform, a very robust ecosystem. We have signed pretty much every major leader within copper and aluminum are somehow engaged on our platform, whether they're a paying customer or we're working on making them a paying customer. We have deeply committed partnerships with major market companies like Sumitomo. We haven't talked about Codelco. They're also a customer, but a very deep partner of ours, helping us to drive digitization globally in the market. Southwire, Arconic on the aluminum side. We're very fortunate to have very large companies that are not just our customers, but are our partners. And that is truly unique. Our platform is incredibly sticky. So even through all the disruption of M&A, CEO changes, platform integration, we've had zero customer attrition. If anything, we've had customers expand their engagement with us. And so we really are truly unique. We're super undervalued, and we have a huge pipeline. We're exciting. We have a lot of deals that are sort of nearing the end of the sales pipeline. And so it's just an incredible opportunity to invest in a very undervalued company that's very well positioned to grow into the future and to really capitalize on a lot of these macro trends that we've been talking about. Regulatory changes, increased focus on sustainability, efficiency, supply chain disruptions. All of that is just going to help us to fuel more commercial growth over the future.
No, it's exciting just because of where I think the world is. And obviously, anytime there's a company that's trading under a dollar on our side, we always get excited about that, because that's also a good time to get in early on. I guess the follow up to that was, I mean, the company, you're obviously based in the US. What was sort of the decision, I guess, to kind of just do the duly listed route like you did on the venture with the OTCQB? Maybe just talk about that real quickly.
Honestly, that's more of a question for Vince. That was way before my time. Waybridge was VC backed. So we went through a different funding process, but I know that Vince had, he's 30 years of capital markets experience. He's had a variety of different companies listed on the exchange, and he just felt like, he explored sort of private funding VC, and just felt like that was going to be the best way to fund the company, given the market dynamics at the time. I think it was back in 2019 it was listed. So for a year, it was sort of self-funded, and then just felt really comfortable with the capital markets sort of exposure. And it's pretty amazing how he's been almost single-handedly been able to, raise money and fund the company for the last few years, because prior to last year, there was essentially zero recurring revenue for the company. Now we have a solid recurring revenue stream, over 2 million. We're on track to more than double that by the end of this year. But really, that's been his like Herculean feat honestly.
Well, they always say teamwork makes the dream work, right? That's the most important thing. So that's it's very fascinating. I do have one last question though, and it's more of a personal question for you. When you're getting up in the morning, ultimately, what keeps driving you? And where do you see MineHub being, I guess, over the next couple of years here, as obviously these challenges start to accelerate globally?
Definitely. Well, as you can imagine, the last few years it's been a long road, right? To convince these large companies to drive engagement. There are a lot of macro forces driving digitization, but there were a lot of forces and a lot of resistance as well. It was a huge investment to get the platform where it was. It was a huge investment to actually sign these big companies. And so now I feel like all of that hard work is finally coming to fruition. So I'm more motivated than ever, because the positivity of the conversations we have with existing customers, the positivity that we have with prospects. You know, just I went to an event at the Port of Panama City in Florida, where we have a partnership, and every major buyer seller of copper in the market in the US was there. And many of them came up to me and said, I just want to say thank you. Your platform is incredible. It's changed the way that we do business. We are so grateful for you. You have such an incredible team. You guys are not just a vendor to us, you're partners. We don't know what we do without you. That is what is motivating me, right? The fact that we built something that is actually dramatically impacting the way major companies are running their supply chain is so incredibly motivating. And the fact that it's been such a long road and we're finally seeing all this huge amount of positivity and such a massive opportunity is just, it's so incredibly exciting.
That also drives me in a way too. And I think Nick too, anytime you can get somebody that you've worked with or doing business with to just come up to you and say, thank you, I think you're doing the right thing. It's not just there to like say, hey, let's sign this agreement, let's move on. Right. Cause there's a lot of public companies that think like that. And you know, you're competing on the capital market side, you're competing with a lot of those type of companies, but I think over time you're obviously playing the long game, which is really super exciting for investors. All right, I guess we'll wrap it up here. Andrea, thank you so much for taking the time to share the MineHub story. Everybody that's listening, MineHub trades on the TSXV under the ticker MHUB and on the OTCQB under the ticker MHUBF. Really, thank you for coming on and keep up the great work. Nick and I might actually start maybe accumulating here at some point, but that's not investment.
We like the space, so this is a nice little add-on to, because we're commodity investors. So this definitely is a nice little add-on to that portfolio.
Great. Nice to meet you guys. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Thanks for coming on. And we'll see you next time, guys, on the Capital Market Series.
Ciao, guys. Take care.